Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my co-host is Misty Hall, and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. Misty won't be with me this evening. She's off for a few weeks, and I'm having some wonderful people come on the show to help me through with it. I'll be introducing our very, very special guest in just a moment. I would just like to first of all wish everyone a wonderful holiday season, and I know this is a very difficult time of the year for many women who are going either into their first year on their own, or they're still in a marriage that's not working out, or even in the second or third year, because your life has had to make so many changes. And I just want to make you aware that you don't have to go through this holiday season alone. I will be there for you. You can come to my support chat, which is 3 times a week, including the night of Christmas night, because many women have a very tough time during Christmas Day. And also on New Year's Eve, I'll be in our support chat, also on New Year's Day, also through the week on our regular chat days. So if you're not part of my support chat and you would like to be part of it, please write to me at bonkaye@aol.com, and I'll be happy to get you set up for that. Also, I did want to mention that I'm now currently working on getting together a support group for adult children, late teenagers, and adult children of who have gay fathers, because this issue, as we've discussed it on a number of occasions, certainly affects, you know, their trust in relationships as they move into their own life. And they don't have any place really to turn to. So in this upcoming year, starting in January, I will be starting online support for anyone who has children who need the support. Maybe they can't talk to you, their mothers, about it or their fathers about it, but maybe they would like to speak to other young people, young adults, you know, or late teenagers. So I will have that support group going on. So please let me know, bonkaye@aol.com, if you're interested. And I also want to mention that I am very excited about our Texas get-together. That'll be happening on March 2nd and 3rd in Houston, Texas. We have women who are from Texas who will be there and women from out of state who will be there. And sometimes just meeting other women who are in your situation really validates who you are, helps you get through the worst of times. And it's really wonderful to sit with a group of women to know everything that you're feeling and thinking. You don't even have to say anything, and they understand you. So we have a beautiful place, a wonderful resort where we stay during the Houston get-together. And even if you're just coming for the one night, you won't be disappointed in the accommodations. They're really wonderful. And you'll get to meet me and other women who are traveling your path and can give you the support you need to make it through. So please let me know if you're interested in that also. Also, if you do have any questions and you would like to call into our show, you're more than welcome to do so. I'm going to give you the call-in number. And if you have a pencil ready, it's area code 646-716-4893. I'll mention that again, area code 646-716-4893. So tonight I'd like to introduce my dear friend and inspiration and in many ways my mentor, Ms. Patsy Ray Dawson. Patsy, how are you?
I'm doing absolutely fabulous, Bonnie, and how about yourself?
I'm doing good. I'm so happy that you joined us tonight because it's been too long since you've been with us.
Well, I agree. You always stimulate my thinking, and I just come away from these programs with some more insight. So I'm excited about tonight.
So am I. And, you know, I first met you, Patsy, I guess, you know, a couple years ago when we started communicating. And what I just loved about you was the fact that you have a new perspective for me, because I'm not Christian, and I don't pretend to be, so I don't have Christian answers, and I feel really bad when women come to me and they have a number of Christian issues. You know, I certainly didn't have the answers that they needed biblically, and then mysteriously you showed up in my life and took care of that problem, right?
I guess so, but you know, you're part of the Bible. The Old Testament's one of my favorite I just use passages from the Old Testament all the time.
I know you do, but at least you can also answer the questions from the New Testament.
Okay.
I just say that I know that Jesus wouldn't want any woman to suffer unnecessarily.
Right.
That's scriptural, I know. That's just made
right.
on personal observation. But certainly you have many of the answers. And maybe you could talk a little bit tonight about the question so many of our Christian women go through. You know, they're suffering in these marriages. And, in fact, we have one woman who I just want to send my love to tonight, Star, who listens to the show each week and who's involved with, you know, somebody in the ministry. And these men just will never admit the truth. You know, they just won't tell the truth no matter how much you catch them. You know, they come up with so many different stories. And, you know, like I say, we have a number of women whose husbands are in the ministry, if you could believe that, who are pastors and who are gay. And it is so difficult for them because, you know, these men are, you know, manipulating them emotionally, spiritually, quoting all the time, telling them that, you know, sex in a marriage isn't all that important. There's so many other factors to it. And, you know, these women are really suffering, Patsy. So do you have any words of advice you can give them?
Well, I guess where I'm going to start is with your last comment about there, these men telling their wives that sex is not all that important in marriage, because sex is actually God's crowning act of creation. And he talks about in Proverbs about the four wonders, about the paths in the sea, the way of an eagle in the sky, and a snake on a rock. That these are wonders that God has built into, you know, he's built the paths into the sea. In fact, the man who discovered the shipping lanes read that in the Bible and said, wow, if they are there, I'm going to find them. And he went out and mapped them, and that's our shipping lanes now. But God says his greatest creation is the way of a man with a maid. And science and technology now has discovered that just the simple act of kissing, a husband and wife kissing, is releasing all kinds of hormones that are binding them together. When they make love, when they have sex together, both the man and the woman's bodies are releasing hormones that make them addicted to each other. They bind them together. And from the very beginning, when God created Adam and Eve, you know, and Adam said, this is bone of my bone and flesh of my flesh, and you know, for this reason a man will leave his father and mother and cleave to his wife. That word cleave means stick like glue, and that's what hormones do. And mm-hmm. if you've got a husband and wife who are married and one of them thinks sex is not important and they are cheating the other, they don't have access to God's marriage glue. You know, God built that within us, just like God built sunglasses inside polar bears, you know, so they can travel on the ice, and grizzly bears don't have built-in sunglasses. They don't need them. But mm-hmm. God built hormones into husbands and wives. When they have sex, that's when it's released, so that they are bound to each other. And when they have this kind of hormones going on between them, they treat their children so much differently than couples who do not have a good love life. I was really amazed one time on one of Oprah's programs. She had a couple on there where the woman, I guess sex was kind of an issue between them, and so she'd been studying and reading, and she decided for her husband's birthday she was going to give him 1 year of sex every single day. So that was her gift, and he was kind of suspicious. He didn't want to get his hopes up, and then she's going to back out. And are you sure you're going to do this? And yes, I'm going to do this. So she made that commitment, and they were on the Oprah show telling what had happened to their marriage. By them making love every single day, the emotional bond between the two of them had so grown and so increased, it was almost more than they could believe. But the most amazing thing was what happened to their kids when mom and dad are openly loving each other. Their kids, all of a sudden, the whole family is touchy-feely. The kids are happier. The whole family blossomed because that man and that woman were releasing their hormones of love by making love, and it's spilling over to their children. God designed for husbands and wives to make love. Lovemaking is a big deal. It is a very important part of marriage. And in fact, after 40 years of teaching and writing on marriage in the Bible, my personal observation is that if a husband and a wife are missing it in the bedroom, then their marriage has got tremendous problems. And usually...
Can I ask you a question, Patsy?
Yes.
Because, once again, not coming from a Christian background, I just do know that there are many different Christian denominations. And, you know, I guess there are people who interpret things however they want to interpret it. But I've had people tell me that according to the Christian Bible, that the whole purpose of sex is for procreation. Where does that come from?
The Roman Catholic Church. And the Roman Catholic Church teaches that little babies are born because of a nasty act between the husband and wife. That's why you need to baptize them. They actually, you know, that comes, well, let me kind of back up. I recently ran across an article that just is really fascinating. You've heard me talk about the book Not Under Bondage by Barbara Roberts that's talking about it. What it's exploring is divorce for Christians. Mm-hmm. And in the back, she has in Appendix 10 a brief history of doctrines on divorce and remarriage that is absolutely fascinating. And when God was dealing with the Jews in the Old Testament, the Jews basically had pretty healthy attitudes toward lovemaking. They still love the Song of Solomon. And you and I have talked about the Friday night, if you want to worship God, well, you go make love getting ready to worship God on Saturday. So, and as I work with people, you know, Jewish women do not have the sexual hang-ups that Christian women do. They just come from a real healthy background. And in this appendix, she traces how that when the church became primarily Gentile, the Gentiles came from a background of paganism, of where they went to two sexual extremes. They either worshipped virgins or they worshipped prostitutes. They had their temples to virgins and they had their temples to prostitutes. The early church fathers looked out at this and said, oh, you know, we can't have anything to do with prostitution. That's horrible. And we have to be better than the Gentiles who worship virgins. And that's when they brought in this doctrine that sex is only for procreation. Let me put my phone down and pick something up, and I'll be right back, Bonnie.
Go right ahead, Patsy. And once again, if you would like to read more about Patsy, you can go to her website at patsyraydawson.com. That's patsyraydawson.com. Or you can find her on my website at gayhusbands.com under Christian Help. You'll see Patsy's website there because, you know, she says some really remarkable things. And also, Patsy, I was just mentioning while you were getting
I heard that, and I'm going to take advantage of you making that announcement. When they go to my website, over on the right-hand side, they'll see bookshelf, and if they will click on that, they will find some free articles, and one of them has 7 reasons God gave sex to Christians, and the least important one is procreation. So just real quickly, I'll read the 7 reasons.
Okay, good.
sexual love impregnates, Genesis 4:17. It exhilarates, Proverbs 5:18 through 19. It educates, Genesis 4:1. That's where it talks about Adam knew Eve, and we think the word knew is a little timid word, meaning they had sex. Mm-hmm. It actually means to know the person as a person, and it's more an intellectual know. Well, it's a physical know, but you are involved with them as a person, so it educates. It relaxes. Song of Solomon 7:9 talks about, even for a woman, you have a wonderful orgasm, Bonnie. You know this. All you want to do is roll over and go to sleep. So, you know, sex is the best sleeping pill you can get. Sex motivates, Ecclesiastes 9:9, where God told a man that one of his rewards for working hard on life is to enjoy life with the woman whom he loves. The word love there means to love sexually or otherwise. So, and I have read that one of the best things football players can do before a big game, professional football players, is to have sex with their wife. It just readies their mind and their body for just getting out on that field and playing their heart out. So it motivates. It keeps a man working. And it consoles. In Genesis 24:67, here it is, sex after the death of someone important in the family. It helps soothe the mind and it consoles the person. And also it unifies, Genesis 2, verse 24, where Adam talked about becoming one flesh with Eve. So here's seven reasons, and only one of them has to do with producing children. So sex is really all about releasing hormones and experiencing love in the arms of your mate. So it is very, very important to marriage. What I have seen in older couples who have not had a history of a wonderful love life together, when they get older, a lot of times you just see such loneliness, such bitterness, their tone of voices and the way they talk to each other. It is, you know, it is really sad. And what I have observed is that if you've got either a husband or a wife who does not know how to sexually love their mate, they are, I'm going to say generally, but I really believe that's a pretty weak verb. Generally, they are very poor parents. Any man or woman who does not know how to love their mate does not know how to love their children. They just go hand in hand. That if you are an affectionate, loving person to your mate, that is just going to spill over into your children.
No, I agree with you, and I think also that, you know, you would probably agree with me on this, that it's not so much necessarily only the sexual act. I mean, sex represents love between two people, and I think it's the greatest form of love. But without that in a relationship, I think we're giving bad messages to our children.
Yes.
Because I think that when they grow up in an environment where they don't see there's any kind of passion, then they don't expect that in their own relationships, and they choose poorly. And, you know, when women come to me, Patsy, I always say to them when they're on the fence, you know, I always, and it's so funny because one member, you know, woman in our chat room tonight, she says, you know, well, I remember when I first came to you a few years ago, you told me that women who don't have gay husbands don't go to you. And I said, that's true. In my last newsletter I wrote, you know, they have a problem with a man and it's not a gay problem. They're not writing to Bonnie Kay. They're writing to Dear Abby.
Right.
So if they're writing to me, you know, there's a reason they have to be doing it. They feel there's something off that's not just a regular problem. But, you know, of course, many of these men will never come to terms with who they are and what they are. And I think this is the biggest problem that women have religious-wise. Is that if they don't have an absolute confession that their husband is gay, they feel that biblically it's wrong to leave them. Can you address that a little bit?
Yes, and I don't I don't believe that women have to catch their husbands in the act or get their husbands to confess to have scriptural grounds to divorce them. In Matthew 5, 27 through 30, where it's talking about mental adultery, right in the middle of that section, Jesus talks about if your eye offends, then to pluck it out. If your hand causes you to stumble, then cut it off. And then he goes on talking about mental adultery. And I was counseling with a couple one time regarding sexual addiction, and the wife was talking about how he was a Christian, and he was out teaching young women the Bible, and he was hitting on them. And so they were kind of talking about that and what should happen and stuff. And then his wife just blurted out, "But I didn't know you were masturbating to them." The man turned bright red, ducked his head, and he said, "That's lust." When he said that, the light went on for me. I thought, wow, I understand now. Jesus was talking about what a man does during mental adultery. He's looking and he's masturbating. And when he's masturbating, he is having sex with himself, visualizing the woman who is turning him on. And one thing, Bonnie, that in reading, I'm not sure, one of your books where you have interviews with a lot of homosexual men, I was just amazed at these men talking about having sex with their wives, and they are visualizing their wives as a man. Sometimes they are visualizing themselves as a woman. Now, this man is having sex with his wife, but he's visualizing her as a man. I believe he is committing adultery right there in that physical act with her, because mentally he is with a man. He is committing mental adultery, which God says is grounds for scriptural divorce, is mental adultery.
Yeah, that is such a great point, Patsy.
You know, it really is, that you don't actually have to be doing it, but these guys who say they're fantasizing about men so they can have sex with their wives.
Yes.
You know, they're in the same boat. I never thought of it that way.
Yeah. What I tell wives is, if he's not having sex with you, he's having sex with somebody, unless he has some kind of serious disease like diabetes or something like that. We're not talking about that. We're talking about young guys. They get married. They make all these sexual promises to their wives, and they get married, and all of a sudden, wow, no sex. And he starts to run her down. You're over sex. Sex not important. There's something wrong with you. And if a young guy is not having sex with his wife, he is having sex with somebody. And that somebody may be making love to himself, visualizing whatever it is that turns him on. So,
Buffy, what if some men ask for sex in a way that's not comfortable for women? What do you tell women in that situation?
If sex is an act of love, you know, a heterosexual man, he's going to love his wife's feminine body. He's going to be kissing her in a way that a homosexual does not kiss her, and he's going to be wanting to please her, because a big part of his pleasure comes from giving her pleasure. So love is on both parts, is about giving pleasure to the other. So if a woman needs to step back and look at the whole situation, is there enough sex? Is it weird sex? You know, is it something that's making her uncomfortable?
Because some sex is weird sex, as far as I'm concerned, and I'm pretty open-minded and liberal.
Yes,
but
okay.
There are places that even I would not travel, you know, with some of these guys.
Well,
do you agree with that? I mean,
well,
there are limits.
Yes, yes. And I recently did a magazine interview on 50 Shades of Grey, and that is all about brutal sex.
Mm-hmm.
And the last book in that trilogy gives the Christian Grey, who is the man all the way through, it goes back to the very first one, the very first scenes, and it is inside his head, and all the rest of it is inside the woman's head. And he reveals that the first time he saw her, he had the urge to hurt her. To him, sex was all about domination and hurting. There was nothing about love there. And this girl was a virgin. She had nothing to compare it to. And she got sucked into it. Of course, she's got the hormones. You know, even if you're having bad sex, you're still having some hormones released. And so you know, just because a woman has the right to set boundaries and to look at, it's an expression of love. And if being hurt, you know, being hurt is not an expression of love. And Christian Grey just said, you know, my job is to find out how badly I can hurt you and you can take it. That is what turned him on sexually. He was not a loving man. So I would say if you don't feel loved, there's something wrong. You need to be looking at the whole relationship. And
you see, once again, I don't judge what people do and like except in several cases. Of course, those cases include sex with children, sex with animals. You know, I am judgmental when it comes to that. I try to be pretty liberal with the rest of it. But I just don't understand it, why people need to feel pain in order to feel pleasure, and why a man should feel he needs to hurt a woman or dominate a woman in order for it to be pleasurable for him.
Right.
I say that if a woman's not comfortable with this behavior, just like, for instance, with cross-dressing, you know, they say that 90% of all cross-dressers are straight, and that may be the case, but that doesn't mean that I want to live with one.
Right.
You know, it doesn't mean I feel comfortable. It's not a documentary or commentary on the guy. He might be a great guy. But I just don't feel comfortable in being with a man who's dressing up as a woman. Now, is there room for that in the Bible, not to have to live with that kind of situation?
Definitely there is. You know, the Bible talks about effeminate. And I'm going to come back to just, you know, sex is an expression of love, and there's a release of hormones in both the man's body and the woman's body to make them more affectionate with each other. And if they're having great sex, they're going to be touchy feely, huggy. They're gonna be expressing touching and hugging with the children, the fruit of their union. It's going to be good, healthy, pleasurable, loving. And if somebody's doing something to someone that makes them uncomfortable, that's not an act of love. That's an act of selfishness. And so sex, you know, it's very private. It's very personal. And people have some different tastes. But the end result is it is an expression of love. And when you come back to these husbands, you know, this minister who's saying sex is overrated, I would just bet you a huge amount of money that that wife has to continually try to convince herself that her husband loves her. I doubt very seriously that she feels love. And when you've got a good sexual relationship like God intended it, you feel love. You don't have to sit down and do some mental gymnastics to try to say, well, he paid the rent. Well, he bought me a new dress. Well, he did this. He did that. Therefore, he must love me. You know, that just does not add up.
Well, I say it adds up. They love you, but they love you like a sister and not like a woman because they're gay.
Right.
You know, I say that a gay man can never love a woman the way she needs to be loved.
Right.
Some women are willing to settle for less. You know, in other words, they're willing to accept a relationship because they have their own needs that are being met, or some of them anyway, like keeping a roof over their head. And, you know, I can understand that. In fact, a woman wrote to me this week and stated that, you know, when I say that women are stuck in the muck, you know, she's saying a lot of reasons why they're stuck is because of financially they're stuck, and I do agree with that.
Right.
But that doesn't mean you have to be stuck forever. I mean, you know, you're stuck at the moment, but you got to make a game plan.
Right.
Because I really believe that nobody has to be that stuck. You know, life wasn't meant for you to live unhappily. And I think you're really doing yourself a great disservice, whether it's for whatever the reason is. I'm not looking at every day like it's a blessing and enjoying every single day. And that's not to say you're not going to have a day that's not going to be bad here or there, or you're under pressure or stressed. But when you have to wake up after crying all night and you're, you know, going to sleep because you're so unhappy living with someone, or you have to avoid them or be sleeping in separate rooms, not because of snoring, but because you don't want to be touched by that person, then there's something fundamentally wrong in your relationship. Now, you are a counselor. Would you agree with that?
Yes, and what I would tell these women is they need to step out of where they are right now and do two things. One is they need to look at their children and look at the effect on their children, because children are harmed by these relationships. And I've read some of these women's letters where they say, oh, my husband's such a wonderful father.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they are when the children are very young, but as the children grow and are more demanding, you know, it takes a lot of emotional and mental energy for a man to keep a wife not happy, but keep her from leaving him when he is not satisfying her sexually. And these men run out of energy for treating their kids right. Their kids suffer. And one of the things that is impressive to me in Malachi is that this is the passage where kind of the favorite passage of a lot of Christians to condemn divorce in Malachi 2, verse 16, where God says, "For I hate divorce, says the Lord." But in this section, and you and I were talking about this a little bit before we went on the air, that in this section, God is really raking the priests over the coals because they are divorcing their Jewish wives to marry foreign women. And God starts in chapter 2, verse 3, he says, "Behold, I'm going to rebuke your offspring." And he says, "And I will spread refuge on your faces and refuge on your feasts, and you will be taken away with it." And in another verse in here, I'm not seeing it right this minute, but in the same chapter, he talks about their offspring. And one of the things I like about getting older, Bonnie, is that hindsight is the way we learn most everything, I think. And as we get older, we've got more hindsight that we can look over and we can draw some conclusions. And in all these marriages that I know about, the number one marriage problem I have dealt with for 40 years is women complaining about their husbands being sexual duds and husbands complaining about their wives being sexual duds. And I now know from reading a lot of your material, some of those early marriages of where I worked with some women, I am very suspicious that their husbands were homosexuals. And just about now, this is not a scientific survey or anything like that. This is just my experience and my observation. In nearly every one of those marriages, and maybe every one of them, those children suffered tremendously.
Uh-huh.
And I don't care whether it was the man or the woman that was the sexual dud. Those children suffered from one parent not knowing how to love the other parent, and consequently, those children grow up love-starved, because their mom or their dad does not know how to love anybody. And being able to express love is the number one hallmark characteristic of being a Christian. And right here God tells these priests, he says, I'm going to rebuke your offspring. You married your Jewish wife to have godly offspring, but I'm going to be rejecting your offspring. Now, he's not doing that to punish these priest husbands. He's doing it because these kids did not grow up in a loving home, and they have got scars, and they're not what they should be as servants of God. So here's God saying, your kids are going to suffer because you don't love your wives. You are acting treacherously toward your wife, and you're not treating your wife right. And your kids are suffering so badly that I'm going to reject them. And like I say, I don't have, this is not a scientific survey, I don't have all experience, but I have just seen this over and over and over again. Children need two parents who are releasing their hormones of love for each other to spill over into hugging and patting and doing things with and loving their kids. But I got a letter recently, Bonnie, you're talking about one of your letters. I got a letter recently from a lady who told me she'd been on Dr. Phil's twice. Dr. Phil had even paid for counseling. And I thought, good grief. I mean, people tell me I'm a little bit in people's faces, but Dr. Phil is really in people's faces. And I know nothing about the program. I know nothing about what Dr. Phil told this couple, but the reason she wrote me was she wanted me to tell her to just hang in there and keep praying until God zapped her husband, who was a sexual addict, into a loving husband and a loving father. And
so
this,
what did you tell her?
This verse that I just read answers that kind of issue. In Malachi 2, verse 3, where God says, behold, I'm going to rebuke your offspring, and I will spread refuge on your face, the refuse of your feast, and you will be taken away with it. That word refuse in the margin of my Bible means to vomit. God says, you guys, when you don't love your wives, you are damaging your children, and you make me want to vomit in your faces, to hurl in your faces. God can't stand these men. People who are unloving, God says, you make me want to puke. He's not going to turn around and zap them into a loving husband and a loving father. This whole book is condemning these men and their terrible attitudes toward their wives. Now, God hates divorce, yes, but he hates the unloving acts in those marriage more that leads to the divorce.
And let me ask you this. What about women who tell me that they can, you know, they keep praying, they're told by their, you know, church that these men can change?
Well, I believe you and I have had this conversation before, and this is an area where we disagree, but we kind of agree too. I believe they can change, and I have a counselor friend who works with sexual addicts, and he helps them make changes, but he and I both say the same thing. It is extremely rare to find somebody who is willing to put the effort and the work into changing. You know, you don't get zapped. You don't wake up one morning, hey, wow, my heart's full of love. What you do is you go and you look at your family of origin. You find out, you figure out why you have this problem, and you purge it from your mind. You learn what healthy attitudes are toward lovemaking. A lot of people just don't have healthy, they have a kind of leftover Victorian negative attitude, you know, like what we talked about earlier. Sex is just for procreation instead of realizing it's for recreation. It's for building love in a marriage. So a lot of times what I have seen in, I've seen this in women, particularly more in women probably than men, if a woman is just ignorant about lovemaking and she can sit down and you can show her scriptures and how important this is to God and that God wants a woman to be a ravishing lover. He wants older women to be exciting lovers. And you can show her this from the scriptures so that she doesn't feel guilty about it. I have seen a lot of women, once they have that knowledge, can make a huge change and become very, very loving wives. Sometimes it does not last because they do not take care of the heart problem. They're just trying to get their husband to stop being mad at them all the time. That does not work. You have to change because you need to change. You have to change even if your mate's going to divorce you because you want to be right before God. So what I've seen with these men is they're not motivated to change. They if they are not motivated to change and to put the work into change, it is futile. It's not going to happen. They're not going to get zapped.
Yeah.
And,
well,
and
I think that might apply for sexual addiction. I don't believe that gay is an addiction. I believe gay is who you are as a person. And I just believe that some people are born gay. And they don't have to act on it, but I don't feel that's fair to impose that on someone.
Right, and even if they're not acting on it, they're not loving a woman like a heterosexual.
Well, they can't.
They can't. They're not capable of it. And I think, you know, one thing that is that I'm just hearing over and over, Bonnie, I read it first in your book, and then I've started noticing it in comments from women that are talking to me. You give an age of when these men usually become impotent with their wives. What do you remember?
I say it's usually in their 30s.
In their 30s? Okay, their 30s, their 40s. And I'm just having more and more women talk to me about, you know, well, he's been impotent for 5 years or whatever. And when this happens, this is what, okay, so I tell these women to do two things. One of them is to look at their children to see what is happening to their children and growing up in an unloving home. The second thing I tell them is look at the future. It is not going to get better. There's something really drastic has to happen to change that man's heart. He can change his behavior till you get over being mad and then just go back to being the way he was until you get fed up again and you play this little game over and over. But eventually, if this problem is not solved, and Bonnie, I am seeing this in marriages where the man is gay. I am seeing it in marriages where he is a sexual addict. I am seeing it in marriages where he is what I call a serial adulterer. All three classes of these men reach an age of where they become impotent with their wives because their wife is not their object of desire.
And I tell that to women who have husbands of sex addicts.
Yes.
That, you know, not every woman who comes to me's husband, I don't classify him as gay, because I do distinguish between gay and sexual addiction, although there are gay sex addicts too.
Right.
But there are sex addicts that will have sex with anyone and everyone and everything and anything.
Right.
And without, you know, regard of whether it's female or male, whatever the case is. But I tell women, even if it's not gay in a traditional sense, it doesn't make you feel any better.
Right, right.
And if they're having sex with men and women, they're still having sex with men. And
right.
The point is that, you know, you need to move away from this because they don't want to have sex with you. They want to have sex with strangers. The excitement
right.
isn't in having sex with you. It's in having it with a stranger. And that's an illness.
Right, right.
And even though I guess it can change, like you say, as with any other addiction, with addictions, they're so hard to change because people don't want to change them.
Right,
they
right.
Like them.
Right. Enjoy it.
Right. And just because the wife or the husband is hollering bloody murder, you know, that I'm not going to live this way and you've got to change. A lot of times they straighten up for a little bit just
mm-hmm.
to appease the mate, and then they go right back to the way they were. So I tell these people, I tell the husbands, I tell the wives, you look to the future. And women who are sexual duds, they're going to reach a stage. A lot of times when they hit menopause, it's like, oh, boy, no more sex for me, you know. And when really that's when the fun just starts. So I say, look at the future. The time is going to come when your marriage is going to be sexless. And when that happens, you're not even going to have the hormones being released. That, you know, women tell me, I go 2 and 3 months without sex. Well, so you're getting sex 4 or 5 or maybe 6 times a year. If you're getting sex 4 to 6 times a year, you're at least getting some hormones released, and your mate's having to get his attitude under control enough to force himself. That's what he's doing. He is forcing himself to have sex with you. Once he gets so worn out from that and says, fooey on sex, I am impotent, and he won't call himself impotent, but he will invent some kind of physical thing, take advantage of some physical problem to say, well, I can't have sex anymore. And a wife can buy into that and say, well, you know, he's too obese, or, you know, whatever the excuse is, it really doesn't matter. He is relieved that he no longer has to force himself to have sex with her. Once that happens and there is no more release of these hormones that God designed to glue a husband and wife together, that marriage will disintegrate more rapidly than ever. And
so what you're saying is there is no timeline on having sex, you know, or making love with your, you know, with your husband. That, you know, it doesn't matter if you're younger, if you're old, it's always, you know, that need should be there. Is that right?
Yes, yes, yes. The Bible, yes, in Proverbs 5, you know, your Old Testament, it talks about a man to enjoy the older wife's breasts, that her breasts are her seat of love. God designed a husband and wife to make love their whole life. And if they get where they cannot complete the physical act, the hormones are still released in hugging.
Mm-hmm.
And these men don't even want to hug their wives. You know, if the man has a legitimate problem, I've got a friend whose husband has diabetes, and he tells her every so often, you know, I really miss sex. And she says, well, I do too. But the hugging is good, she says. And he says, well, I hope the hugging's good enough. But so, see, they are still touching. They're still kissing. They're still hugging, which is releasing hormones. But these husbands
and,
again,
and you know what, Patsy? They
what?
Can still do other stuff.
Yes,
you know,
yes.
Just having diabetes is not a reason not to be, you know, sexually involved with somebody. I mean,
yeah.
Silly too,
yeah.
Because I know that people have problems all the time. You know, I had a problem when my boyfriend went through prostate cancer, you know, several years ago, and he was going through radiation, and it was an issue. But there were other things for a while that we could do, you know, besides hugging,
mm-hmm.
that were sexual in nature. So I think that people who say they can't have sex due to something like diabetes, I'm diabetic,
yeah,
and I can certainly have sex. So, you know, sometimes people have to really want it and then do it. You know, there's all
right.
different ways to stimulate people that are nice ways
right.
besides talking.
And the wonderful thing about it is, see, that God designed these hormones to be released with touching. But
mm-hmm.
but husbands and wives who are sexual duds, when they are young, have no desire. They are not initiators of hugging and kissing. They may let their mate hug and kiss on them, but they are not the initiators, and it is not the same, and the emotional void that is going to take over that marriage is just excruciatingly painful for the mate who is loving, and the children suffer. I have had several people say to me when we've talked about this, and they say, and the children move clear across the country to get away from mom and dad. Mm-hmm. If you can't cut it in the bedroom, your kids are going to suffer, and they are going to be estranged from you in more cases than not.
And I think there's a lot of truth to that because, you know, once again, you are the role model for your children. And I always tell women, if they see you're living in a relationship that's void of emotion and affection, you know, that women, you know, I always say it's a monkey see, monkey do, monkey act just like you syndrome.
Right.
And whatever children see in their lives, you know, they're going to repeat in their lives. You're their legacy. And that's why so many women who stay with mothers where there's domestic violence, they're bound to walk into those same kinds of relationships, and then they stay also, because this is learned behavior.
Right.
And also, no matter how much women want to delude themselves, and I say delude themselves by thinking they're hiding all this from their children, their feelings of unhappiness. You know, when I hear women say, well, I'm a good actress. Trust me, you're not that good.
Right,
Children know when their parents are not happy. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. And besides that, what I am learning is that these men and women who are sexual duds, they put a lot of energy into fooling their mate, into mm-hmm. keeping their mate from leaving them, and they do not have the emotional energy to manipulate their children like they do their parents. I mean, their spouse. And kids are not stupid. Now, kids may have childish ways of solving problems, but they see more about what's going on between mom and dad than mom does, because dad's working real hard to fool her. But he's not working hard to fool Junior. And Junior's getting the picture. Junior's either going to grow up knowing how to manipulate and fool a woman, mm-hmm. or he's going to maybe have a lot of disrespect from mom because she's buying dad's bull. He's going to have problems, and dad's not going to be the father he should be to Junior because he's too busy manipulating mom.
Mm-hmm.
These kids suffer tremendously. I cannot overemphasize that. Our children are really, really, really victimized by an unloving home where there is one parent who does not know how to love the other one, does not know how to love the children.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in my classes, I have only, up until this time, I've only given out one guarantee. When I teach the Song of Solomon and the Shulamite, young Shulamite maiden talks about their homes, she says she rejects King Solomon, and she says, I'm going to marry the common shepherd boy because he grew up in a loving home just like I did, that he learned to love from his mother. And I usually pass out to my students a guarantee. It says, if you do not examine his home before marriage, I guarantee that you will examine it after marriage when problems arise, and you will be bitter. And I signed my name to it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking about issuing a second guarantee, and that is, if your spouse, I don't care if it is a man or a woman, if your spouse does not know how to love you sexually, then your spouse does not know how to love your children, and your children are suffering. Your children are being scarred by that. And God here in Malachi says, I'm going to rebuke your offspring. You don't know how to love your wife, and I'm going to rebuke your offspring. They are damaged beyond belief by the treacherous way you deal with your wife.
Well, that's really true. These kids are damaged. And that's why I mentioned at the beginning of the show, I'll be starting a support group. Because these kids take so many of these issues into their own relationships in life because they're unable to, you know, unscramble all the missing pieces. But so many times these kids are really torn because they know about relationships before their, you know, mothers know about them. They become the keeper of the secret. Do they tell their moms, you know, break up a marriage, or do they keep this to themselves because they don't want to hurt their moms and they see their dads are doing things that, you know, are terrible, but, you know, they don't want to make their father think that, you know, they're siding against him. You know, these marriages are really so destructive to kids, and that's why the kids really have not, they haven't done enough for our children. I always say that. We need to do more.
Right,
as far as
right.
getting their lives, you know, back in shape. And that's why I want to start the support for, you know, the young, teenage, you know, adult teenagers.
Yeah, I think that is very important, and I just tell women over and over, step out of your pain and look at your children. Look at your children's pain. Because a lot of times, you know, like you're talking about the woman saying, I'm a good actress. Well, only person you're fooling is yourself. I mean, you're not even fooling your husband. The only person you're fooling is yourself. And these kids, you know, they know what's going on, and they feel so unloved and so unvalued, and they just have tremendous scars.
Right. Also, the fact is that if you do know and you don't tell your children, you know you're keeping secrets from them, and they start wondering what other secrets are being kept from them.
Right. What I have seen is that they think that you're siding with that other parent against them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, if you've got an unloving mate, whether it's a man or a woman, I would advise people to take your kids to lunch individually and just say, you know, when I'm at work, what do you and Dad do? Or what do you and Mom do? And just to ask questions and just be open. You know, children carry a lot of guilt, and sometimes they are threatened. You know, you might say, well, does Dad ever tell you not to tell Mom anything?
Uh-huh.
And because this is such a huge burden for children to bear. And usually the wife is, you know, the husband is such a good con artist in fooling her and blaming her that she just doesn't have a clue about what's going on with the kids.
You know, and that's why I say there's so many unhappy people living unnecessarily unhappily, where you don't have to keep living like this. I think that Patsy's wonderful as far as giving you interpretations from the Bible. You know, Patsy, talk a little bit about your newsletter and your, you know, your broadcasting.
Well, I have a radio program. We've kind of taken a break for Thanksgiving and Christmas, and we'll start back in January, the third Thursday of every month. I have Oscar Miles, who is a licensed counselor, on there with me. The name of my radio program is God Loves Passionate Sex, and because he does, and anything less than that is not rising to the full potential of being a Christian. My newsletter is called Embarrass the Alligator. People can sign up for it on the website for that, embarrasstthealligator.com. That's where I talk about issues such as this, and I have found that where that name came from is over the last, maybe 4 or 5 years, as I would be talking to people and they're telling me about this their marriage problem, usually marriage to a sexual dud that is just making them climb the wall. And I'm telling them, you know, you need to embarrass the alligator. You have got to get your mate's attention to make them realize this is a serious problem that has to be solved now. The longer you go with it, the harder it's going to be. Sin loves secrecy. And if mom's covering up for dad or dad's covering up for mom, that's just giving that sin free rein to grow and to get worse, and it's do the damage to the kids and stuff. So they can sign up. They can see past issues of Embarrass the Alligator at the website, and they can sign up for future ones. My newsletter, either at the end of this year or January, is going to be dealing with what I call dying fly marriages when there is no hope. And that's something that's taken me a lot of years to reach this point. This is more hindsight. You know, some marriages, one person can just work their heart out trying to do everything right, making all kinds of sacrifices for that marriage, and the other person is living a lie. And there are some marriages, it doesn't matter what you do. It doesn't matter how hard you work. You're just not living with an honest person, and there's no way you can make that marriage be a healthy environment for your children.
You know, I find, I don't know if you have found this, but in all the years that I've been doing counseling with couples, you know, I tell our women, and, you know, I tell them, don't be offended that I'm saying this, but many of us are what I call broken women, myself included. You know, I'm the first to say it, that, you know, we find these relationships because we're broken. Many of us came out of homes where there was abuse in the home,
right,
where, you know, there was a broken family, where there was drugs, alcohol, where we were caretakers from the time we were growing up as little children, people pleasers, always trying to get approval from parents who can't love you the way that you need to be loved. And, I mean, we go from one broken relationship into another broken relationship because we're broken.
Right.
You know, we have to fix ourselves. There's no way that we can fix broken people. You know, we have to get away from that concept that I can make it okay, I can make it work, I can fix it. There are some relationships that can never be fixed, and women spend a lifetime trying to fix them. Would you agree with that?
Yes, yes. And amazingly, in the Song of Solomon, you know, when Solomon was proposing to the Shulamite, he was telling her, you know, you are your mother's perfect one. I've got 140 wives, but if you'll marry me, you are so perfect, you will end my search. You will fix me. You know, that's what Solomon wanted. He wanted her to fix him. And this little teenager, probably 13 or 14 years old, her mother had been teaching her about love. She'd grown up in a loving home. And she rejected Solomon. She did not try to fix him. The only person we can fix is ourselves. And, you know, once we start trying to fix someone, it becomes so emotionally exhausting that we can't be good mothers. Our whole life is walking on eggshells, trying to fix a broken man who doesn't give a darn. I mean, he really doesn't. He's got us right where he wants us, and he just keeps on keeping on. Being abusive, and we can't fix him. For these women who say, he won't confess, so I'm stuck, Jesus says, by their fruit you shall know them. If your husband is not sexually loving, he has a major spiritual and character flaw. The hallmark characteristic of being a Christian is being a loving person. By his fruit you shall know him. The man has major issues and major problems, and God does not trap you in unloving marriages.
Well, once again, I just want to mention, if you go to my website at gayhusbands.com, you can go right over to the right-hand side where there's links, and under coaching and therapy help, it says Christian Help for Women. And when you click into that site, you'll see Patsy Ray Dawson and her site, and Transforming the Lives with the Power of Scriptures. And I think during this holiday season, it's so important when people tend to say, well, maybe I can try to make something work that can't really work because it's the holidays. And, you know, we think more about God during this time with Christmas. You know, you have to once again get a big taste of reality here and not spend another year suffering in a marriage that hasn't changed in this past year for the better. You know, so many women I find, Patsy, are willing to just accept crumbs. You know, and they never get enough crumbs to even make a cookie, forget a cake.
Right.
You know, they're just fiddling and, you know, biting away at these little crumbs that are falling their way because they have a good day or because somebody's nice or he says, I love you, and that's like some kind of false hope promise there. You know, it's time to save yourself and, like Patsy says, save your children.
Right.
You know, it's funny that when I ask women, and I always ask this question, this is kind of my breaking point in the conversation when women are telling me their problems and why they think they should stay, and I say, Let's take this perspective. You have a daughter, you have a sister who you love very much and you would only want to see wonderful things for them. If they came to you and told you they're marrying a man just like your husband, what would you tell them? And I have never had one woman tell me I would tell them it's okay. They all say run fast as you can away from that man. And I say to these women, if you wouldn't want this for your daughter, why are you willing to settle for it for yourself? And, of course, usually the women who settle the longest are those who have these religious conflicts.
Right.
But I think through you, Patsy, they learned that these conflicts, you know, really have been distorted to them.
Right.
And it's not the way that Christianity states that, you know, life has to be. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes, the ideas that we have are leftovers from Roman Catholicism and also Victorian morals, and
mm-hmm.
And they're not Bible principles. You know, we live in a wonderful technology age when people have handhelds. When they're listening to a sermon, they can go online right then. They can look up the definition of Bible words. They can look up other passages. Nobody has to be limited by what some denomination is teaching. They can go straight to the Bible and learn what the words mean for themselves and be liberated. God does not trap anyone in an unloving marriage. It is our own ignorance of God's love for us, God's design for marriage, God's design for sex, how God has designed these hormones to bless our lives and to create a wonderful, loving environment for our children. I just do not have the words to express how horrible these kind of homes are for the children. The
mm-hmm.
children are just hurting so badly from the lack of having a loving mother and a loving father. And what happens is, you know, a lot of times these fathers, the mothers do not know what is going on when they are not there. And these children grow up and they blame their mother, they blame the innocent spouse, the loving spouse, for not protecting them from the unloving parent. And mm-hmm. since I have been making that statement, I have had women in their 50s tell me, you know, I grew up in an alcoholic home, and you are right. I blame my mother for not protecting us from my dad.
Mm-hmm.
And I have had older people say, my children have blamed me for what my husband did. And they say, I never see my kids because they are angry at me for not protecting them from my spouse. And that's, I just see and hear that over and over and over and over again, that, you know, you may be thinking you're a good actress and those little kids are there because that's their home and they don't have anywhere else to live, but someday they can move clear across the country and they don't have to call you, they don't have to write you, they don't have to see you. And lots of kids are rejecting their parents because of the unloving homes they grew up in.
Hmm. Well, with those powerful words, Patsy, I want to thank you so much for being our guest tonight. As always, you're so stimulating, informative, educational. Oh, I could probably come up with another 1,000 words to describe you. Then we would be here another hour. I would mean every single one of them because, you know, I don't hear anybody else saying the words that you say, but you have everything backed up, so it's not like you're just coming up with this stuff out of the air. I mean, you have everything scripturally, you know, backed up. And, you know, I hope that women take heed to what you say, that it's just not about you, it's also about your children. And even if you can't find a way out today, you have to have a game plan to get out.
Right.
And, you know, if you need support or you need help, you can get in touch with me. You can get in touch with Patsy. You can listen to her past programs also, right?
Right, yes.
On
yes.
Blog Radio, go to Patsy Ray Dawson. You'll find her broadcast there. You can subscribe to her newsletter, Embarrass the Alligator. And also you have some publications that are available. Is that correct?
Yes, if they go on my website, PatsyRayDawson.com, and click on the bookshelf, there's some free booklets there. The first four chapters of my book, God's People Make the Best Lovers, is there free. So there's a lot of informative material there for free.
Right. Well, Patsy, thank you so much, and hopefully you'll come back sooner than later next time.
Okay. Well,
and,
I really,
you know,
do appreciate you having me, Bonnie. So.
Oh, that's okay. I'm going to really sit and not embarrass the alligator right now. I'll really embarrass you by saying, if I have my one holiday wish, it'll be that I'll get to see you in Houston.
Well,
girl can always wish, right?
Yeah, we'll just have to see if that works out.
You never know which road God's going to take you down, right?
Right, right. That's for sure. Right.
All right. Right. Well, you know I love you.
I do, and I love you too, Bonnie. So.
All right. Now, to all of our listeners, we wish you a very merry holiday season and the happiest new year, a happy new year that'll bring you the peace and the freedom and love that you deserve, because every woman deserves it. And if you need support, just write. Or go to Patsy's website, and it'll make your whole life better and different. So good night to our audience. Good night, Patsy. And
good,
we'll be
good
back
night.
Here next Sunday night. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.